was an encore.
He talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald on the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Can you believe it? September is kind of going away. We've had, yesterday or today was the first day of fall. Oh, we're sliding into fall, end of summer. Farmers markets are still going on. I was kind of ruffling around with things and I found a poem that was actually written for the Donna Lana Kitchen last May, 2019, at the farmers market. Janae Smith, who is a business owner downtown, she does structuring and designing, and she's a seamstress, and she sews things beautifully, a tailor, and she has a little shop downtown. She also, during farmers market, she'd set up her little table in her Smith Corona typewriter, and she'd kind of make you a little poem right on the spot there, and she made one for the Donna Lana Kitchen. Here's what it says, a poem by Janae Smith. On the radio rings laughter from chit-chats of food, wafts through the clatter. Farming sings through the air, advice most noble felt everywhere. Thank you, Janae. It's a good thought to start out the show.
Well, at least that captures our intentions.
Yeah, yeah. Advice most noble. Yes, that's us. Oh, it's fall. We had this awful derecho come through, and some of our farmers and people that grow apples and other fruits were hit rather hard. So what is the outlook for apples here in central Iowa? Donna has a berry patch report.
I did. I talked to Judy Henry, and fortunately, they did not have any storm damage on the fruit. So their U-pick is open 9 to 6. Tuesday and Thursday, and Saturday 9 to 1:30. They also still have red and black raspberries until frost. There, and if you don't want to go pick them, you can buy their apples at Wheatsfield and at Farm to Folk. Good. And at least we've got one apple orchard that is up and running. I hear that the ISU Hort Farm, who also brings a lot of apples into town usually, did not fare as well. So between the drought and the hail and the derecho, some we're going to have a few less apples, but berry patch is still happening. I'm pleased to report for them. And if you have never been there, it is a beautiful setting. It's really, really lovely. Great for kids, of course. And, you know, wear your mask. It's all out of doors. It's one thing that we've still got left that we can enjoy. So go pick yourself some apples.
South of Nevada, just east of Ames, Iowa. Yes, it is fall.
The berry patch. I'm sure you can Google it. Also, what I like about going there is they have a lot of different varieties of apples. So usually you can get a taste and find one that you really, really love and then pick a whole bunch of those. Yeah. Rather, when you go in the supermarket, if you don't know the varieties, like everybody has a lot of Honeycrisp right now, but there are some good older varieties that this time of year, it's much easier to find those unique flavor profiles. So it's apple season, folks.
Yes, it is. Well, here in the Donna Lana Kitchen, we try to bring you ideas about food and about other things too. Where do we get our ideas for radio topics each week? Oh, who knows, Donna? We kind of look at each other. We have an inspiration this week from a recipe book sidebar story. I like recipe books that not just have recipes, but have stories with them. I pulled this off my shelf. I've had this recipe book for a long time. The Italian Country Table, Home Cooking from Italy's Farmhouse Kitchens from Lynn Rosetto Casper. She used to have a radio show on the PBS, or on the
NPR
radio. And I learned a lot about cooking from her.
She really made food talk radio. She made it pretty famous.
Yeah. It's a pretty good recipe book. I ran across this interesting article, or an interesting little sidebar. She tells about her Italian heritage and visits to Italy. And she talks about eating white foods. We eat with our eyes, huh? So if you think about white foods, what do you think about? Bland, safe, is it sick?
Cottage food? Cheese, yeah, bananas.
Well, I immediately thought, when I'm feeling like I had the flu, my first thing I think about is, if you're going to come back and eat something, I usually nibble on soda crackers and...
Yeah, the broth thing, yeah. What is that?
Yeah.
Bread, rice.
Yeah.
I forgot what the four eating things are.
White.
Yeah, right.
Eating white. So we think of... of white foods as maybe a little sort of
bland.
Yeah, bland. But you can go a lot farther than that. I want to read this little story here from Lynn Rosetta Casper. She writes about Italy. Eating white. Mangiare un bianco in Italy means a diet of bland foods without color to treat an afflicted liver.
Okay, and this is old style.
Oh yeah. And almost every other illness, real or imagined, Italian livers seem to take an awful beating. Ask a dejected looking Italian friend what's wrong, and the reply is cold, flu, or whatever, plus but I have a little liver trouble too. I grew up in an extended Italian family of unhappy livers, especially those of my grandmother's generation. There was real pride in being old enough to complain about your liver. Claiming you needed to eat white was a high art. The statement had to hint at noble suffering without complaint, but never quite reached the martyr state. Lynn Rosetta Casper goes on, while lunching in the Piedmont, arrogant waiters turned into Florence Nightingales when my host, an elderly agricultural minister recovering from surgery, pushed aside the menu, stating courageously, I cannot eat any of that. I have liver trouble and must eat white. The parade began. First, a flan of pale vegetables baked in a blend of eggs and cream, then hot broth with Parmigiano, followed by pasta, tossed in cream, mushrooms, butter, and cheese. Finally, poached fish, huh? Poached fish and steamed potatoes with lemon and olive oil and a vegetable mayonnaise salad. Dessert was denial itself. A pear poached in white wine with a little custard. My host was restored.
It doesn't sound too depriving, does it?
No, it doesn't. If you... think of white, what white, beige, we eat a lot of white things. So, like I said, when I'm feeling poorly, soda crackers and ginger ale are kind of my go-to, but we eat with our eyes, we eat with our minds, and we realize what we eat is important to how we feel.
I guess it means in Italy that they just leave the tomatoes and pepper out.
Yeah, yeah, wow, they're kind of spicy there. There's a lot of nice things to eat. Recently, Donna, we kind of had an evening where we celebrated fish.
We did. So since we're having really nice weather this whole week, and I've kind of been feeling like, oh boy, we're close to the last hurrah. And with this pandemic breathing down our necks, you know, pretty soon our outdoors limitations are going to come. So I set up a table in my backyard, and I've had a series of small, socially distanced meals outside, because we won't be able to do that. So Lon and I both went to our friend Paula and Gio's, and we had, Gio is really good griller. So he did two kinds of fish for us. Now, fish in Ames is a little tricky, right? It's not like we have good fishmongers here, although we, you know, we can buy fish. Mostly I tend to buy frozen fish because a lot of frozen fish is often quite good, because in the fishing industry, what is caught is often frozen right at sea or very quickly thereafter. So if I have to choose between, you know, something laying in the fish case at one of our local stores that's not frozen, or a frozen one, often the frozen one is perhaps fresher. Depends on when they got the fish in, man. But if you're buying unfrozen fish, be sure to ask at the fish case when it came in, so you have some idea, because the life of a dead fish is, it's shorter than a piece of chicken or beef or something.
The life of a dead fish.
Yes. The life of a dead fish,
that.
Right.
Write that down.
Exactly. Got me on that one. So my trick is, and the, what's it called? The mini mart? The Muni Mart. No, the Uni Mart, which is, it's mostly Asian foods. I think Korean, but Japanese and Chinese. And they have quite a selection of fish that are often hard to find in Ames. So I think Gio got both the mackerel and the calamari there. So the squid, the calamari, it comes whole and frozen, and it's about, I don't know, what was it, 18 inches long with the tentacles and everything?
This is a learning experience for me, although I have had chopped up calamari at restaurants.
Right, most people have had it, yeah.
Whoa, deep fried. This was like meeting it, not face to face.
This is
like
a real, whoa, one. Yeah.
It was long and yeah.
And squids, well, squid come in many, many, many sizes. Ah. Most of the ones that you'll see are... have either been cut up into what's called steaks, calamari steaks, which are big pieces of the main body of the squid, because some squid, when they catch them, are quite large, and then other ones are teeny weeny. So this was probably a mid-sized calamari, and I think, when you buy them frozen like that, you have to clean them. They come with all of the innards in them, and yeah, they have these funny little, they're not bones. They're, I don't know if it's endoskeleton or whatever it is, but little things in there that you have to get out. So he had it, he cleaned it out. He marinated it in, what did that look like? Sort of garlic, obviously, olive oil, probably either vinegar or lemon or something. And so he had it marinating for at least 24 hours. Now, the thing with cooking squid or calamari, and this is true of a lot of shellfish, it is very easy to overcook it.
Wow.
So the cooking point between underdone and overdone is very, very short. So you really have, the timing is there, which is true of most fish too. I mean, it's true of meat, anything that you're grilling. But it's particularly precise with fish. And it's, you know, it's not like you can really stick the thermometer in and tell. It's a textural thing. So the problem I have with cooking calamari at home is if you don't give it a really high heat, it just comes out the wrong texture. So what Gio did, he built a fire, a real fire in his fire pit. And then he set the rack like right down on the coals, just almost flat on them. So you know, you're watching your fire at a really high temperature, and then he just, you know, threw it on the cooking rack, and then probably only turned it once. But the issue here is getting it, because if it's too done, it becomes tough. If it's underdone, it's just still soggy. So there's this short point, and he did a really, really good job. The other thing he cooked was mackerel, which is about, it's, I don't know, what do you think, 8, 9, 10-inch fish, mm-hmm. whole. It's a very oily fish. He did that on his regular grill. That was delicious. And he did this really fun thing. Right now, if you have garlic chives in your garden, they are flowering. So for a couple of our dinners, you just cut the... cut the flower off, and then you, with a pair of scissors, you just trim the tiny little blossoms. So he served the mackerel with the chive blossoms just clipped onto it. It was really good. I've used them in salads also, And I did also a potato soup the other night, which I garnished with the chive blossoms. Mm-hmm. They have just this little tiny crunch of garlic. So anyway, we had a two fish dinner and it was quite delicious. And if you want to be adventurous, I would suggest trying out the Unimart.
Yeah, squid. Who would have thought? Here's a note from Lynn Rosetta Casper's recipe book about cooking calamari or squid. Squid cooks to silky and tender in 20 seconds.
In 20 seconds, you're about right.
And is such delicate eating. Please set aside any squeamishness about it. Squid is the least fishy of seafoods and welcomes many different seasonings. It does. It does.
It's just getting, but you really, for that 20 seconds, you need a very high temperature.
Yeah. It was really, and then of course, besides the body, the steak, white steak part of beef, there's these little tentacles with little suckery things on them, and those are interesting too. So there you go. It was
hardly standard fare in the Midwest.
But it falls into the category of white food. And you mentioned potato soup. There you go. One thing about white food or bland colored food, when you put it on your plate, like, it's nice to garnish it with something or put something else. You know, the idea of having a chicken dinner with corn with mashed potatoes or maybe cauliflower, there you've got all your white stuff and it just is aching for something to make it. I think that's why parsley was invented. Just at least put some of that on
the color on the plate.
Oh, please put a little color on your plate. Yes. Oh, risotto is another thing like that. It's rice. But
we had risotto at one of our garden parties this week. Lana and I did. And the risotto. Now, I put, with risotto, you use a certain kind of Italian arborio, or there's another rice too, but arborio's more commonly available. And what you're doing is you're just cooking it soupy, not sopping wet, but you add a little, well, I use chicken broth because that's homemade real chicken broth, mm-hmm. not the kind in the can or the box, but that's, you fry the rice up with a little olive oil and then you keep adding like a quarter cup at a time so that you keep the bottom of the pan wet. But in the sofrito, which is the fried part, so you cook the rice in the broth and wine, basically, mm-hmm. and some olive oil, and if you want herbs or something. But then in the frying pan, you fry up the sofrito, which is usually onions, garlic. In this case, we had, what were those mushrooms?
Oysters. Golden oysters. We happen to have a good catch of that. Right. We found some in the woods.
We had so many mushrooms that inspired the risotto, because it's not that often you have that big of a stash. It was really a lot. So you fried up the mushrooms with the onions and the garlic and the herbs. And I put in a little bit of shredded carrot because I wanted some color in it. So the carrot didn't add a lot of flavor, but it added little flecks of color to the risotto. So that's, I think when you're cooking, you also, as Lana would say, you cook with your eyes. So you want some bits of color on the plate.
Yeah. How long does risotto take to cook this from beginning? It seems like you'd have to stand there and then stir it. So,
well, it has a reputation for being tedious, but if you have a good thick bottom pan and you're doing other things in the kitchen, like I worked on the sofrito. What's the word?
Don't look at me.
I'm sorry. The sauteed vegetables. I was working on that while I was stirring, because you pour in like a half a cup of stock, and there is a trick. The stock should be hot.
Ooh.
So the stock is sitting in a separate pot and it's warmed up and you just keep adding it and kind of stir. So, you're not standing there watching the pot the whole time.
Good suggestion.
Yeah.
Put in hot stock while you're at, I could see that.
Well, because you want your temperature to stay kind of even and not drop too quickly if you put cold stock in. So mm-hmm. that's, The technique requires warm or hot stock while you're making it.
Ah, yum. Risotto. Officially a white food. And, well, I suppose mushrooms could be, too. It's, you know, kind of beige color.
It was all pretty white, except for I added the carrots, just for the color.
Just for the color. Pasta. Pasta is another thing. I have a restaurant review. You wouldn't think I'd be going out much, but I put on my mask the other night and went out early. Unfortunately, because of the times that we are in, the COVID restrictions and distancing, local restaurants are having a hard time. There are a lot of storefronts now that say for lease, for rent. There are restaurants that are kind of like giving up or trying new things. And I want to mention, there's a restaurant that on Main Street that is closed now. La Tosca was there for a while. However, folks, this is some local gossip. The energy and the owner of La Tosca also has Stomping Grounds, which is a restaurant in Campus Town in Ames. And that
a long established restaurant.
And it is still going good. It's going well. And some good things have moved from the La Tosca restaurant to the Stomping Grounds restaurant. My husband and I tried out the restaurant last night, and they had just started to be opened on Monday night. So we were kind of the only people there. Talk about socially distanced. Right. We were social on the patio. Nice
they
patio.
Have big, big, nice patio and there.
One of the nice things that they moved from the downtown restaurant is their chef. Chef Brett Bleek is now at Stomping Grounds, and I always like him cooking. And here is a thing that I had of his. I thought it was, I signed up for the, or we ordered the special was fettuccine with slivers of summer squash, a few mushrooms, some bacon, and saffron cream. The man has got a way with pasta.
Yeah, that's really good with Italian food. It's always a pleasure.
Well, how nice. So that is what I had, and that is also I suppose it falls in the white category, and I know I didn't suffer at all. I didn't have an upset stomach to start with or anything. I just ordered what I thought looked really, really good. So if we move into the colder weather, unfortunately. I don't think we're doing a lot of outdoor eating. I don't know what's going to happen with restaurants that have patios and things that they're still carry out. Oh, I keep noticing these little cars around town that do home deliveries of food. So that's interesting. But anyway, there's a bit of restaurant review for Stomping Grounds, a restaurant in Campus Town, Ames, Iowa. It is good. They have good beer and wine.
It's very important to find ways to support art. I mean, I'm not so worried about the big chain restaurants, but we do have some nice smaller restaurants that are locally owned, that give us unique kinds of foods. And I really appreciate these small businesses. And these are the ones that, of course, are in the most jeopardy right now financially because of the pandemic. So try to find a way to safely support one of our local restaurateurs.
Yes. Can order lots of good stuff there. And they have good coffee and tea, too. So there you go. Well, I want to take this opportunity to say this is KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Donna Lana Kitchen. We are talking about white food today. White, not fancy colored, flashy food, but white food. And we're going to start thinking about some white things for dessert. Donna, what do you have for us?
Well, there's always white things for dessert. Panna cotta, even vanilla ice cream. What I was thinking of, and I love this word, clafouti, C-L-A-F-O-U-T-I. So it is a French dessert. Basically, it's kind of like a custard pie with no crust under it. So it's fast to make. And it always has fruit in it. A typical cherries are the standard. And the French will do this. You leave the pit in the cherry.
Oh.
So you kind of have to watch for it when you're eating. Because the pit actually also brings, you know, it has a little almond-like flavor to the pit. So I've pulled up a recipe from the French farmhouse. We are on a roll with these farmhouse cookbooks. Oh. And this is also from about the same period as the Lynn Rosetta Casper book that you were reading from. This is Susan Herman Loomis, who is an American who lives in France. We talk about her often. She was many years ago a good friend of mine. We just don't see each other anymore because she's in a different side of the world. But she is quite an authority on French food for Americans. So she writes about the clafouti. She says it's a custardy, fruit-studded cake that all French farm women have at their fingertips. It is something you can kind of whip up very quickly. She said there isn't a standard recipe for clafouti, which is true. She says she makes it with cherries or apricots, but this time of year we could be making them with apple slices, pear slices. You could plop a few raisins in.
Raspberries.
You could still get raspberries into a clafouti. Her little tip is to use a minimum of flour in the custard. That would keep it a little bit lighter, and to have a hot oven for quick cooking. And she recommends putting little nuggets of butter on the top just before baking. Okay, so her recipe is 12 ounces of fresh apricots pitted and cut in half, so you could use the equivalent of any other fruit. 1 cup minus 2 tablespoons sifted unbleached all-purpose flour, a heaping quarter teaspoon of sea salt. Here we go. 2 cups of milk and 3 eggs. And she uses vanilla sugar, but she gives a recipe for that. You could use sugar and vanilla extract. And then she puts the tablespoons, a tablespoon of butter cut into 6 pieces, go on the top. So she uses a hot oven, 450 degrees, and you butter and lightly flour she says that she uses a 9.5-inch non-reactive round tart pan. They don't have to be round, but they usually are because you get that pie-like slice out of it. So you put the fruit after you've, you know, buttered and floured the pan, right? You put the fruit in just cut side down, and then you whisk together the flour and salt, and then you add in the cup of milk and keep going, and the eggs one by one, and the sugar, and then you pour it all over the fruit. Dot it with butter, place it in the oven for about 25 minutes. So it's a really simple, you know, it's something that a mom might whip up at night so they have a nice dessert for the kids. It's really simple. It's fairly healthy. And since it's pie-like without having to make a crust, which makes it simpler, it also reduces the calories of it if you don't have that big butter crust under it. So that's one of the reasons I kind of like a clafouti. It's halfway between a cake and a pie, and it's really quick to whip up, and you can kind of use whatever you have. So that is
good.
Clafouti.
Can you tip it over onto a plate? Does it come out so the fruit on the bottom ends up with the fruit on the top?
it's more like you cut it like a pie and kind of lift it out with a spatula.
Ah,
good. Like that. Because you as it cools, of course, it has a lot of eggs in it, and the eggs make the custard firm, and then you just serve it like a pie wedge.
Oh, good. Yeah. Kaflooty. You're right. It is a wonderful word. And it is a...
Kaflooty.
Kaflooty. And it is... It's white, except for all the stuff you put in it. So
yeah.
There you go. There you go. I have some other ideas for white sort of things. I've made a couple of times a rosemary pear pizza, okay? A pizza crust.
That sounds very good this time of year.
Crust. I add a little extra sugar to it, and it does...
Wait, you add the sugar to the dough, or do you sprinkle it on after you roll it out?
That's later. Both. Pastry.
Both
and. A little bit of pastry. Dough with a large egg beaten in, and roll it out like a pizza and make the edges up a little bit.
Oh, wait, so you're using a pie dough or a pizza dough?
Well, it's funny here. This recipe says pear pizza, and down here it says pastry. So here's the recipe: 1.5 cups all purpose flour, 1/4 teaspoon salt, a little bit of sugar, 1 stick butter, 1 large egg beaten, 2 to 3 tablespoons cold water.
It's more like a pastry because it's got a lot of fat in it.
But you treat it like a pizza, roll it out, and on top, slice up 4 firm ripe pears, lemon, shredded zest of 1 orange, basil leaves, and rosemary leaves. It's really good. A little bit of cinnamon and black pepper, and sprinkle with 1/2 cup of sugar, and drizzle with olive oil.
Oh, those are nice flavor combinations.
It is. And you bake in a, let's see, in a, again, in a pretty hot oven. 450.
450 hot oven, yeah.
And then and while the oven is preheating, put the crust in the refrigerator and then quickly assemble it, slide it into the hot oven, bake 20 to 25 minutes.
So it is like a pastry dough. It needs to be kept chilled.
It's a pastry dough. Yeah. But think of it as a pizza because it's in and out. And so that's a good thing.
Well, when you make that, invite me over.
All right. I do. It's pear season. It really is. It's pear season. All right. I have another thing that I ran across here again, and we're celebrating this.
We're thinking desserts today, aren't
Italian we? Italian cooking. And this is a white dessert, Christmas orzo in swallow's milk. This is a pasta dish guaranteed to draw attention and to please everyone. Orzo pizza, pasta shaped like rice grains. I like orzo pizza.
I do too.
Pasta.
It's tiny little pasta.
Yeah, and it is cooked in, you don't call milk a swallow, no. Cooked in fragrant, sweet almond milk, and it's a Christmas or New Year's Eve sweet in parts of Italy. They used to call it swallow's milk. It's a whimsy because cream and milk at that time of year, at that part of the Mediterranean, was hard to come by, but they did have almonds. And so it's almond milk. Make the almond milk about 6 hours ahead of time if you want to make it.
A real almond milk.
You'd start out with 1 pound of blanched almonds, 6 cups hot water, and cook that down. And then you also add 6 tablespoons almond syrup, half cup to 1 cup sugar. This is a sweet thing. Salt, little cinnamon sticks, and
almond syrup is not too easy to come by. You would probably have to get that on the internet.
Yeah, but this idea of swallow's milk, okay, and it's for Christmas. Well, but I suppose you could have it anytime. But I could see it being a really nice Christmas treat. You cook that like rice pudding, except this is a pasta, orzo pasta.
Sounds very child friendly.
Yeah, and sprinkle with cinnamon. Oh, very good, very good. So that sounds good. It said that there was the tradition of the almond milk, the virgin nourished baby Jesus with it, of course, but that's just hearsay, of course. And it's a
wait. Now we're saying that Jesus was fed almond milk.
Oh, sure. And I'm sure he was Italian too. So, and then It's thick and creamy, and it's kind of a grown-up custard, too. So try this for dessert. It will not disappoint. Also, there's it suggests a fine Asti spumante to go with it. So we're talking, this is a celebration. This is Christmas orzo in swallow's milk. Huh? This is sort of a segue here, folks, or, you know, we're going to get our topics kind of thinking about, can you imagine we're going to be thinking about Christmas? Well, we are. We're going to take a little quick KHOI break, but we're going to be back talking about Christmas. This is KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. If you want more information about this show or this fine radio station, go to www.khoifm.org. About white food today, things that are white. And of course, here we are, just at the start of fall, and Donna and I are sitting here before the show started, and we're talking about, oh, remember, we've got to do something about the ice on our steps outside the kitchen door.
We're psychologically trying to prepare ourselves for what we know is coming.
White things, snow, ice, oh dear. Because we start to talk about white food today, and there's a lot of things to talk about. So Donna said, you know, it's not too early to think about gifts for Christmas. And in the past, we've talked about making your own. So what can we think about now?
Well, the reason I'm thinking about it right now is, of course, it's still, you know, we still have herbs and things in the garden, but we won't, you know, if you wait to make some of these things until late November, they're going to be not available. So like right now, one of the things we do when we take in all the herbs, you can dry them, but you can also do things like make liqueurs, you can make vinegars, you can make even honey pots and things like that. Like Lana, oh, tell us about the jam you just brought, and jelly.
Jelly, yeah.
Now, this is a good one. She did a really good new one here.
Well, Donna turned me on to rose geranium. Rose geranium is a plant, and the leaves have this amazing, amazing smell. You can use that taste, that rosy taste, for many things. And I thought, well, I had some peach juice that I had cooked down, and the peach juice was from some Iowa peaches, and they were not the big juicy rundown.
You know what Iowa peaches are like.
they weren't the big run down your arm kind of juicy peach. They were a little more solid. And so I thought, well, I bet they'd make good juice anyway. So I cooked down the juice of these peaches by putting, I took the pits out, but I just had the peaches, put them in a big pot, put some water in the big pot, and brought it to a hefty boil. So I broke down all the cell walls in there, and then I hung it in a jelly bag, suspended over a big pot overnight, and it dripped out, and I ended up with a bunch of peach juice, okay? So now, here comes the be timely. Use what you've got in your garden now, and Donna's always giving me ideas, but I thought, this might work. Donna might like this. I used that rose geranium, the leaves, and quite a handful of them. Maybe there were, two dozen leaves about the size of my palm. And I took that juice, and as I make any jelly, or actually I made other herb-flavored jellies, without adding anything else, just put the juice on the stove and bring it to a boil and add the rose geranium leaves, and that smell of rose geranium went into the peach juice. Then I fished out all of the rose geranium leaves, which by that time were less than beautiful. They're all gushy. So shook all that stuff out. It still smelled like rose geraniums. And then I continued with my jelly making process, adding pectin, bring to a boil, adding sugar, bring to a boil, and then can, cover, and make sure everything seals and process and all. But anyway,
it worked.
This was a little test batch. So, Donna, what did it taste like?
Well, it tastes like rose geranium. Because, of course, and it was a beautiful pale pink color. It reminded me a little bit. This is a very common French tradition. They make a rose petal jelly. You maybe could buy some online. Sometimes I use it. It's an additional rose flavor. You can use it in cocktails. You could use that rose geranium jelly in a cocktail too.
Ooh.
I know. So it worked really well. Another thing that I do is you take a jar of honey, runny honey, not the crystallized kind, and you just drop a couple of rose geranium leaves into the honey and just stick it in the cupboard for a few weeks, and then the honey becomes infused with it. But your rose geranium jelly, it's kind of like your basil jelly, isn't it? Only a different flavor.
Do that with basil too, except this is definitely rose flavored.
If you think of
rose water added to things, there's some Middle Eastern dishes that you could add rose water to that. Just lovely. And this is a taste that I learned to kind of like, and Donna gave me the ultimate compliment. She tasted my, this tastes just like my rose geranium deodorant. This is good.
Oh, it's true. At Weisfield, they have a deodorant stick. It's called geranium. So I had to buy one because I wanted to, it's rose geranium.
Yeah.
So we're big on rose geraniums, which pretty soon it will be time to take them in.
Mm-hmm. They do not
overwinter. We have two different methods. I just dig my whole pot up and stick it in another pot in the window. Lana, who's much better horticulturalist than I am, cuts hers off and re-roots. Now, mine end up looking really scraggly, and hers always look fabulous.
Well, sort of. But yeah, you can that's one of the things that do re-root pretty well. And also, when I'm picking things out of the garden now, when I'm making jams and jelly, I'm thinking ahead of, this kind of jam, yeah, that my friend likes this kind of jam. Set aside a jar for them. And it's nice to have homemade gifts, jams and jelly, or pickles if you make
them. Well, yeah, the thing is, when you're thinking about gifts, you want something that no one could buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cannot go to the store and buy rose geranium jelly, let me tell you. So now is the time when the herbs are still available to think about, there's multiple possibilities. Of course, there's the really simple one where you just make a herb-flavored vinegar. Now, to do that, use a good vinegar. Buy some white wine vinegar, not distilled white vinegar, not apple cider vinegar. You want a white wine vinegar or a champagne vinegar. Or if you're going to do a heavier herbal mix, like if you want your vinegar to have, say, rosemary and garlic and peppercorns in it, then you can use a red wine or even a balsamic. You don't have to buy the most expensive vinegars for sure, but you want a decent quality vinegar. And for example, it's time to make tarragon vinegar, right? Uh-huh. So I'm going to, all you do is you take a clean glass jar, you pour the vinegar in, and you stuff it full of the herb.
Yeah, you do have to stuff it full, at least for tarragon.
Yeah, with the tarragon. And then you just seal it up and, you know, put it in the pantry, kind of where there's not a lot of light. Occasionally, I remember to shake it up a little bit. And you let it sit 6 or 8 weeks. So if you do it now, While the herbs are still, you know, when it's time to harvest herbs, and now it is time, you have it ready for the holiday seasons.
Right, right. Beat the frost, folks, because there's things out there in your garden.
It's gonna come fast now. So, you know, think basil vinegars and mixed herb vinegars. The other things that are fun to do is to make liqueurs. So, like Lana and I both have lemon verbena liqueur, and Susan Herman Loomis in her French Farmhouse cookbook once again has a recipe. You hardly need a recipe. What you really need is encouragement for eau de vie du vervine, which is lemon verbena. She just uses 2/3 a cup of sugar, 1/4 of vodka, and 8 good sized branches of fresh lemon verbena cut in half, plus 1 branch. You stick a branch in the bottle for when you're ready to bottle it, right? So she...
Did you heat it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to read here. No, you don't.
Oh, good. Because then the herbs won't turn into slimy bits.
No, you just... Same thing as you do with the vinegar. She says to put it all in the jar in a dark place and shake it daily until the sugar has completely dissolved, and then let it rest for 2 to 6 months before opening. Then you strain the liquor into a sterilized bottle. And at that point, you push the whole, an extra branch of fresh lemon verbena in the bottle. Now, verbena is another one that has to come in the house. So it's a very woody plant. To bring your lemon verbena plant into the house, you actually cut it back, and then it sprouts new leaves over the winter. Now, I was going to ask you, Lana, when you cut your lemon verbena back, do you cut it all the way back, or do you leave a few little bits of green on it?
No, I go down to where the last few leaves are. I leave a few leaves on.
So you leave a few leaves.
Just for encouragement.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm doing. Now, when I had them in California, they didn't have to come into the house, but you still trim them radically back in the fall, and then they start all over again. And then I took all of the leaves off, and they just came right back. But I wasn't so sure about, you know,
it's pretty
a little more temperamental bringing them in the house. So there are all kinds of liquors you can make with fruits, and particularly with herbs and spices. Another recipe here. These are all vodka based with fresh thyme leaves, water, and sugar, the same sort of thing. So that, you know, that is another option. Besides, of course, you can dry them. You can, now I was going to encourage you to make some kind of jelly or jam with lemon verbena in it.
Well, let's give it a try. Yes,
we were thinking. What were you saying? Maybe orange marmalade or lemon verbena, or even a lemon marmalade with lemon verbena.
It is time to start putzing around and see what we can come up with. Again, thinking ahead, because this is the kind of thing that just may be handy when the holidays come around.
And it's time to get it in now.
Yeah. Be Johnny on the spot. And Donald and I were talking about this too, the COVID-19 might make the holidays a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I'm already kind of thinking, well, since we can't do the usual party cycles and visiting all of your friends, what are we going to do to mark the holiday season? Lon and I had, obviously, bonfires will still be, you know, if you have a good fire, you can at least for a little while be outside together. Also, I'm sure that this will happen. I have been continuing with my neighbors and friends, sort of making something and leaving it on front porches has been our kind of way of maintaining our relationships.
Yep.
And
we can,
so that will be big at Christmas. So I think this gift giving of homemade goodies is going to be more significant this year than ever, because there will be lots of other things that we just won't be able to do.
Right.
So. Think about it now. It's our way of bracing for what could be a difficult winter. So we're trying to find some good ways through this. So start now and and plan ahead.
Good. Also, I was out recently for a short amount of time, and I happened to step into the Octagon Gallery. There's an art gallery downtown Ames on Douglas, actually right across the street from the KHOI studio. There is a nice two-woman show called Supernatural, artworks by Peggy Johnson and Vera Skakic, August 22nd to October 3rd. You've got some time to step into the community gallery. There's space. You can see some really fine stuff, some really fun creations of sewn, constructed paper, wood, leather, little wonderful little sculptures and things on the wall. That's the Octagon Gallery. And I would like to mention an upcoming thing. The Downtown Ames is actually going to run its art walk again. Downtown Ames, that'll be Thursday, October 8th, 5 to 8 p.m. Wear a mask and stroll and see stuff. It'll be fun.
Oh, we forgot to mention the KHOI auction.
Oh, very good. Have at it, Donna.
Yeah. So,
KHOI auction is a fundraiser. You can go to the KHOI website, khoifm.org, and on that website, you will notice something that says KHOI Auction House. Poke that button, and it takes you to this place where there is all sorts of items for you to bid on and give money and to KHOI Radio to keep this community radio station on the air. Lots of lovely artwork pieces. And Donna.
Oh, yes.
Tell what you've got.
From the Donna Lana Show, we put an item in the auction, which are, I call them my Michelle Pfeiffer biscotti, so you can have a whole batch, your own batch of Michelle Pfeiffer biscotti. And the reason I call them that is because I cooked for her for many years, and she wanted a recipe that had no fat in it and all whole grains and was a sweet that was relatively healthy. And I have to say a funny thing. When she was making the Midsummer Night movie in Italy, believe it or not, they had me send the biscotti to Italy for her. So you can have your very own batch of Michelle Pfeiffer biscottis, and they are delicious. They are made with Lana's organic eggs and local flour from Earl Hafner at Early Morning Harvest. And we have some flavoring options. So whoever bids on them can tell me, you know, whether they want the chocolate chip one or the fruit and nut one or something like that.
Okay.
So go on the KHOI auction website and bid on the biscotti package.
Very good. Support this fine radio station. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today's music by a group called Four Shillings Short, the selection of tunes. It's a medley called Heaven's Gate. Support this fine radio station. If we're in your ears, put us in your heart. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
I'm Jerry, Youth Services Manager at Ames Public Library.
And I'm Kathy, Adult Services Librarian at Ames Public Library.
We would like to invite you to join us each week for Reading Radio.
Our show airs each Wednesday at noon and centers on a different theme each week.
The show starts with stories for our young listeners.
And then includes a conversation with all kinds of recommendations related to our theme.
We hope you'll join us. Happy reading.